Board. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm tired.
Yeah, it's been a long
life.
Been a long, long life. So we definitely have stuff to talk about, but I feel like, what's housekeeping like?
We've been publishing a lot on the protest and a lot on, like back to work stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Housekeeping, we're about to start a fundraising push. Last year we did the Sustain campaign and we're going to be doing that again this year.
Yeah.
So, now is a good time to start thinking about what has Scott B. meant to you in your journey through Chicago local news and life and entertainment. And, if you're in a position to buy a subscription, it is optional, but it is so helpful.
Yeah.
So give it some thought.
It basically prevents us from ever putting up a paywall, which we never will at this point. But
it keeps us from having to agonize over it.
Exactly. If we were doing like a $1 a month subscription, your $2 a month is basically paying for you and someone else to get our content. And once you do subscribe for that $2 a month, you can sign up for emails directly to your email inbox.
So it's like you're getting a subscription, mm-hmm, in the traditional sense.
Yeah, and there will definitely be other incentives for that $2 a month level that'll just get kind of added on. Like, we've been talking about doing some kind of like...
We've been talking about stuff.
A lot of group chat things or something like that.
Yeah.
So I have a tangent. Can you reach that slime, computer keyboard slime that's spilled all over the floor? Yeah.
That's a fun tangent.
That is a fun tangent. Where's the lid for that?
I don't know.
So on TikTok, there was this channel called Check Out This Thing on AliExpress. You know what AliExpress is, right?
No.
AliExpress? I don't know how it's pronounced. But it's basically just like...
Oh yeah, this thing can fart.
Yeah. It's a, like, manufacturing wholesaler for, like, different things. And for whatever reason... They had, people with kid have a kid somewhere around their life. Know of slime.
Oh yeah.
That you make out of like baking soda or some shit. I don't know.
It's cornstarch.
Yeah, some mixture of things.
As a teacher of children.
Yeah, so they're selling kind of like individual little containers of it that you can use that's actually really useful for like cleaning a keyboard or like cleaning a desk or something like that. It has a lot of like weird cleaning uses or inside of your car. But we just lost the lid to ours and it's probably all dried out now.
Well, no, it's not dried out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm playing with it right now and it's nice and gushy.
Yeah, it's really satisfying on a digital level.
Your digits.
Right. Yeah. Not like a technological level, but a digital level.
Like touching it with your digits.
Yeah. Yeah. Current events, there's a lot going on in the world, obviously. But as far as stuff that we've talked about recently, just kind of like catching up. I don't know if that I've seen any other major cities like actually make quantifiable efforts to defend the police. I know we were talking about that recently. But Chicago's definitely not doing that. There are a lot of calls to do it.
To defend the police?
Yeah.
Defund.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Did it sound like I said defend?
Yes.
I meant defund, if anyone was confused by that. But there is a big movement right now. I saw this on Twitter trending today for CPAC.
Mm-hmm.
There was the people who were tweeting hashtag good morning Lori. Because one of the things, we actually covered this in an article, written by the fantastic and amazing CAD, Shatan Sorich, talking about CPAC, which stands for the Civilian Police Accountability Committee, which is an elected body of officials that would be in charge of police accountability. And it's actually something that... I don't think it was under that name at the time when Lori was running for mayor. It was something with a G. Google it. But she had made a campaign promise of hers was to elect some kind of
police accountability coalition.
Yeah, right.
Well, and that's she was involved in Rahm's version of that.
Well, so the elected officials part of it would mean that it's a voted in position.
Well, yeah.
Whereas that task force.
Well,
that
yeah. She was a so part of. Rahm's version of it.
Right.
Yeah. As yeah. in the corrupt version of it.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I saw a tweet that was talking about. That was like, oh wow, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous thing to ask for, CPAC. Like, what do you want next? Like an elected board of officials for. Like schools, and it's like actually yes, that is what progressives want because right now it's done by the same way that other task force is done, where it's just appointed by the mayor.
Yeah.
And the mayor's administration.
Should I put the slime on one of the cats?
I don't feel like that would go well. It's sticky for that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I don't want to even. I don't even want to go there.
That's true.
Has Moody... Who got gum in their fur?
One of them did.
One of them got something really sticky in their fur, and it was, like, a real issue.
It was a to-do.
We had to, like, cut their fur, I think, right?
Yeah.
Have we told you all about the time that Moody caught on fire? Because that's also a great story.
It's a horrible story.
Yeah, but it was, like, really...
We had, like, just gotten her or something, and she walked by a candle that we were like, and we watched her do it, and we were just like, in our minds, we were like, oh, there goes the cat.
Yeah.
Right, you know, walking past that candle, but she's so fluffy.
Yeah.
And apparently,
flammable.
So flammable.
So very flammable. She went up so fast.
Well, and she was, we, like, sprung into action, and right. she, like, stopped, dropped, rolled.
Yeah, she knew exactly how to be on fire.
Yeah, no, she handled it very well.
Yeah.
And, like, she wasn't burned at all, thank God.
I know, I was so...
Thank God.
Her whole life flashed before my eyes.
Yeah.
In that moment.
She was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
She had some singed hair.
Yeah.
It was really... really terrible. It was like one of the scariest things. But she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're just kind of watching.
She's thriving. And the cats are right here while we're recording.
I can tell that we're really on our last kind of thread. Because we're
it's
just.
It's a
really,
struggle.
It's really. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. That's why we didn't record last week, just because it's been really hard to know what to talk about. You know, quarantine has been hard. I know it's been hard on a lot of people, and it's not over. It's nowhere near over. But,
as much as people would like it to be.
Right.
Like, it's not over just because you're bored. If you look at the, at the trend, the downward trend, like,
mm-hmm.
It's not even, what public officials are showing is, like, a hyper-zoomed-in version. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the trend, like, we are still at a plateau.
Illinois.
The country.
Oh, the country's upward, in fact, right now. Because of Arizona and Texas and Florida.
Yeah, no. Illinois is actually the best trending.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, we've mentioned this on the show in the past. You know, short of, like, New Zealand numbers where you're getting zero cases, we're not looking at a time... The amount of deaths from COVID-19, we're past like 400,000 deaths globally. And the reality is that we're not going to be out of this until there's a vaccine. You know, the social distancing and all of that are not going to be the same. Like, we're not going to go back to a world that was the same until there's a vaccine.
Yeah.
It's just the reality. And, you know, that is, it's, you know, what that means, how we move forward, how we open things. Like, it isn't a conversation to be had, but the way that things have been rolling out, again, there's another article on this I just wrote recently a couple days ago about workers talking about their working conditions through all this. you know, pushing to reopen, the people that are affected the most intensely are servers, their library employees, and their everything in between as far as employees go, because anyone that's essentially facing consumers every day, I mean, for the longest time we've been talking about essential workers, like, at grocery stores and everything, and you see the working, the conditions that grocery stores had to put up very quickly.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks do not feel like that's what's going on in these industries that I guess we can call less than essential, you know, like restaurants and things like that. And furthermore, you know, workers are coming out and saying, just don't even come. Like, yeah, we're open, but in a lot of these scenarios, and this is true for grocery store workers, these people are this is their only, they don't have the option to not go to work.
Right. Well, and if, that, and right. part of the contingency with unemployment is that if you're offered suitable employment,
you can't receive unemployment.
Well, yeah, you can't turn down suitable work.
Yeah. Of the many things, it's one of the many things that is wrong with the way that we've treated this pandemic. There are so many things that America has done wrong. Prioritizing profits, for example. Not providing direct aid to humans, but instead bailing out companies for billions of dollars. But making the direct aid that we do provide contingent on whether or not you've been offered a job,
yeah,
means that the most vulnerable, if they've been offered a job, have to take it. Otherwise, they don't receive unemployment benefits. It's a complete opposite of what should be happening. Because there are people that are not capable of working but have to, but then are not capable of receiving unemployment. Yeah. It's a real mess of a situation. And yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where you become very quickly aware of how strong the American propaganda system is.
Yeah. I was out on a walk yesterday and walked past an Andersonville bar, and I stopped to read the rules of outdoor dining, and it was like, you can, as long as you have your mask on, or as long as you can have your mask off if you're sitting at the table, but if the server comes up, please put it back on. And like, I kind of, like, stood and watched for a second, and no one was putting their mask back on when their server came up. And I was just like, these people just don't care about these workers.
What is the point of that? I just, you know, it's hard, right? Because people haven't left their house. You know, you've had to eat your own cooking for a while. Although I'm sure there are people that have just been Grubhubbing every day. Oh, not that I, you know, DoorDash occasionally, obviously, but I think that there has to be other creative ways to get outside of your house and sit with people, like a couple people that are in your 10 people. Like, there are ways to creatively do that.
Like last night, so we have a couple of big tables that we roll out for, like, when we would have people over in the before time. And we brought one of those tables outside, and like, I sat on one end and two of my friends who have been quarantining together sat on the other end, and we just sat outside and talked, and it was for a couple hours, and it was so nice. And like, you know, if you have access to outdoor space, like, just do distanced porch sits.
Yeah.
Do distanced backyard sits.
Right.
You know, it's cheaper, and you're not putting anybody in danger. Mm-hmm. Like, just be mindful, you know, right. Just because you're bored doesn't mean this is over.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing of, if you are willing to be a little riskier with your health, like if you know that you're not going to be around someone who's maybe more vulnerable than you are for a while, you know that you can potentially quarantine afterwards. You know, like, that's what a lot of folks that went out and protested, they made sure that the next 14 days they were able to quarantine. Things like that. If you've figured out your own plan, the trickiest part of all of this is when you then force your plan against someone else's consent.
Yeah.
You know, when that diner goes to a restaurant and they're taking their mask off and their server comes up and they're not putting their mask back on, that's them taking their plan, that is using a plan that goes against the server's consent. Because what the server's consented to is you walking up, when they walk up, that you put your mask back on. Mm-hmm. And it's like that in so many of these like service industries positions, we're not going to be just inherently with the like customers always right dynamic that
it's Americans totally take. An issue of consent.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be so hard to get past that without like a severe rethinking of the way that we think about service industry.
Yeah,
it is totally a matter of consent. It's hard. Another thing I definitely wanted to talk about was more pushes for rent freeze. You know, we're coming up on July 1st. So that's the wildest thing to me, is that we're, what? It's been April, May, June, and coming up on July. We'll be 4 months into this. First of the months into this. And there's been one $1,200 stimulus package. Like we talked about, unemployment's been so hit or miss as far as people receiving it. People have been, and people that are working are seeing less hours. The fact that there's been no talk of substantial, you know, rent negotiations or rent freeze or mortgage negotiations or whatever.
Well, so hold on.
Whatever angle you want to look at it.
Well, so hold on. There's the state today.
Really?
Just announced a $900 million state coronavirus recovery package will help businesses, and this is from Black Club Chicago, will help businesses and families get back on their feet, Governor Pritzker announced. This program includes $270 million in grants to small businesses that have suffered losses. $150 million will go to 30,000 renters who will receive grants for missed rent payments. $20 million will go to businesses in disproportionately impacted areas. $20 million will go to bars and restaurants that can't offer outdoor service. $10 million will go to barbershops and salons. $10 million to gyms and fitness centers. $32.5 million to programs aimed at fighting poverty during the pandemic. And $150 million will go to 10,000 homeowners to help them make mortgage payments.
Wow.
So 30,000 renters in Illinois are going to get relief.
Wow.
That's a drop in the bucket.
Right. And more than many other states. And the other piece is that, you know, a lot of, like Lift the Ban, which we've covered in the past, mm-hmm. That's the movement against, for folks that maybe don't know, in Illinois, we have a law that specifically prohibits rent control. And that's why apartments in Chicago don't have rent control. And the Lift the Ban Coalition is a progressive movement to repeal that law. And they've been doing a lot of work with the Autonomous Tenants Union to push for rent freeze or a rent freeze of some kind. And so if you want to read up more on that, I highly recommend checking out their site. And again, we wrote an article on this and you can check it out in the... We referenced some of
Lift If you the were a subscriber, too. You would have gotten this into your inbox, dear listener. But, or maybe you are a subscriber and you maybe know you all know. Of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows?
The other one I wanted to talk about was, I just wanted to mention the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
You're so happy.
I love it. Well, I'm an ANCOM at heart, so like I love this kind of shit. And
an ANCOM is?
Anarcho-communist.
Got it.
Yeah. And I say that, you know, with the, like, I'm of the, I could talk about political ideology all day, I'm sure that some of you can too. You know, all that I mean to say is that I definitely fall into the category of believing in personal liberties as well as, you know, people being, like, the people's needs being provided for them. I think that some things are basic human needs, but then also that, anyway, so like the idea of the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, maybe you haven't heard of this either, dear listener. Protesters in Seattle after, you know, many of the protests that have been happening in recent weeks, claimed blocks around a police precinct, aggressively so, such that the police decided to flee the precinct entirely, and so they've claimed this land as the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, and there's just a ton of
#Chaz.
There's just a ton of kind of like free resources, like food going around, and like in some cases there's like a lot of trying to support local businesses where people can too, that are located in the area. And yeah, it's just kind of like this really, it reminds me a lot of like Occupy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun, it's just important. And it's definitely like part of what's keeping, and there's a ton of other things, elements to what's keeping the conversation around protest, and around, you know, finding justice for Black lives, mentioning, I just want to mention names, Breonna Taylor,
mm-hmm.
who, if you don't know, was murdered in her own home.
While she was sleeping.
George Floyd, who at this point you've probably heard of, but if not, who was, you know, an officer, stuck his knee on the back of his neck for 8 minutes, which for some reason, that was, I don't know, it's fucking ridiculous. And another thing, again, that we posted about was that there have been an uptick
in lynchings since
all this, yeah, which is just absurd. You know, one of the cases that we mentioned that we published about was Robert Fuller, in California. There's been a couple in California.
I think there was one in Texas today.
And it's really concerning because in so many of these cases, the police just automatically say suicide, which is just like, it's just something really to just speak up about and to keep an eye on.
Because, and like when it gets ruled a suicide, the investigation immediately stops.
Yeah, it's terrible. And yeah, we'll keep following it, and I highly recommend you do too. But again, it's this thing of...
Well, and it also... So when a death is ruled a suicide, it has like a bunch of... It impacts justice in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, the younger sibling of someone I was friends with was found dead, and from auto asphyxiation, and it was ruled a suicide. Mm-hmm. And it affected a number of things, I think, relating to like how it was handled. And I know that it impacted the investigation, it impacted like potential benefits, although I don't know what benefits, like, I don't know, it made a difference in how the death impacted the family. And it took like a decade for the family to have the cause of death taken from suicide to accidental death, because it turned out that it wasn't a suicide, it was that he was playing the choking game.
Oh.
And like to get high.
Right.
And so, but the time and labor it took for this family to get the ruling changed from suicide was ridiculous. And this was an affluent white family, mm-hmm. in an affluent suburb in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So like the effort that it's going to take the family of these men and women who have been lynched.
Yeah.
I can't even, it's going to, yeah.
I mean, and that's one aspect of it. Another thing I really want to talk about, which is relevant to Chaz and to the protests at large, is just these double narratives we're seeing. You know, I try and talk with my family about this, because, you know, I see it on their end, and if anyone watches Fox News, they've probably seen it too. But the way that a lot of these protests and the lynchings, for example.
I'm playing with slime, I apologize for any errant farting noises.
And Chaz, like, the way that the media portrays these things, it's like the title that it's not funny, but just the I was just really proud of this title of A Tale of Two Capitol Hill Autonomous Zones, because it's just this idea of you have what reporting on the ground is saying with the autonomous zone, for example, where it's, you know, they've like set up couches, like it's mostly very chill. They're like expanding gardening, this, that, and the other. And then you have Tucker Carlson going on Fox News talking about how everyone has an AR-15, everyone's armed to the teeth.
Well, like, I mean, but isn't that like Tucker Carlson's dream?
Right.
That everyone is armed to the teeth.
Yeah, and that's part of their narrative too, is it's like this hypocrisy of like, oh, can you believe the left, like, on one hand wants to ban, take away your AR-15, but on the other they set up a country. And then it's like, that's also fucking amazing because it conflates liberalism and leftism, which we've talked on the show before.
Oh yeah.
Of the idea of like, you know, there are socialists that believe in owning a gun, but that also believe in the idea of not necessarily that gun, like everybody should have an AR. Like, anyway. It's the media doublespeak of it is really, really difficult because it just, I mean, it's emblematic of American media in general. Like, it's not a new phenomena or anything like that. It's part of the reason we ended up with Trump as president. But you know, it's definitely something to where if you have family members or if you, you know, I don't know, if you are in conversation with someone, like, try to suss out, you know, where they're getting the information from, because there's just a lot of false narratives being told, as always.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was really what I wanted to talk about with that. The other piece that I know that I wanted to touch on that I'm now forgetting.
Bon Appetit?
Oh, yeah, we could definitely talk about Bon Appetit. We published an article about this, but for those that don't know, there's just been, I'm trying to remember where it started. There's just been a lot of talk about race and representation.
It started with, there was a Puerto Rican chef who's...
Yes.
Her name, so this is a story that I brought to your attention, so I'm going to talk about it. So it started with food columnist Ileana Maisonet, apologies that I don't know how to pronounce that last name, but on Instagram their handle is Eat Gorda Eat. She pitched a story to Bon Appetit and was told that it was, and it was about Puerto Rican food. And she was told that it was a story that should have been told either 5 years ago or 5 years from now. And she was told that by a white editor. She posted about that recently, and Adam Rappaport got in touch with her and said, hey, saw your tweet, you know, give me more information. I would love to know who told you that. And there was this extended conversation between the two of them about representation. And she brought this up because there was an article written by another white editor about Puerto Rican food. And it brought up this question of representation at Bon Appetit. Shortly thereafter, a picture of Adam Rappaport, who is the editor-in-chief.
The editor-in-chief.
Yes. Who was the editor-in-chief before he resigned, which is a point I was going to get to, in brownface at he and his wife dressed up as Puerto Ricans for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And in the caption referenced that. And Sola Elwali, who is an assistant food editor, I believe. That is her title. She has over 15 years in the industry. She's a former restaurant owner. She is, like, she's so incredibly talented. She was brought on as an assistant food editor to assist people with less experience. And she posted this story being like, I call Adam Rappaport to resign. you know, people of color at Bon Appetit who appear in videos are not compensated for those videos, and our white colleagues are. I'm paid $50,000 a year and have 15 years of experience and make less than people with less experience than me. Mm-hmm. And this is wrong on so many levels. I'm foisted in front of a camera to be to as a show of diversity, but I'm not compensated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all performative and it's wrong.
Yeah.
And the internet exploded.
Mm. I'm sure.
And the white food editors all went on strike. And since, for the past 2 weeks, there have not been any new videos posted mm-hmm. on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel, because all of the white food editors have refused to appear in any videos until changes have been made. Adam Rappaport has resigned.
So has, what was his name? Matt something. There's another person, I think is a Condé Nast employee, who was the media conglomerate that owns Bon Appetit. They also own Vogue. I think his name is Matt Ducker. I'm gonna Google it.
Okay. But, they all, so it's just this super interesting, and like they've all, like all of the white food editors have been like donating. It's really.
Yeah. Matt Ducker was the video head of video.
Gotcha.
For Condé Nast.
Got it.
All of it.
Yeah. It's just, am I missing anything?
I'm pretty sure that's everything. I mean, like, the thing I mentioned is, and you've kind of mentioned this already, is just, like, you know, if anyone's watched Bon Appetit videos, you'll know Solo for basically being the person who taught everyone how to temper chocolate.
Right.
Like, the amount to which, there's a video that was going around on Twitter that you can probably still find if you search up Solo's name, of her just constantly explaining how to do this, that, or the other to her colleagues. It's just wild. You know, because obviously she's getting paid a salary, but what the way that the structure of that business worked was that anyone with a series, so like It's Alive, Molly Boz's series with where she's like surprised with a recipe,
yeah, it's like a scavenger hunt,
right? And Gourmet Makes, any of those series, the host has like a different title, and they're paid a premium for their appearances, and so anyone else that's being put up on video is not paid extra for that work. They're just being paid their regular salary as a writer.
Right, and so like I think that the administration has been calling it a coincidence that only white editors have series,
mm-hmm.
but it's like literally only the white editors have series, like Carla has her back-to-back series.
Oh, right.
Molly has her scavenger hunt thing. Andy Baragani has a thing where he learns, which is just like such a slap in the face. This is such a slap in the face, although Andy Baragani isn't white, he's Persian. But he has like a very infrequent series where he learns the food of different cultures and learns how to make it in 45 minutes. Brad has It's Alive. Claire has Gourmet Makes. Chris Morocco has the one where he puts on a blindfold and has to recreate recipes
right.
from taste and feel, but he can't look at them. Like, every single white editor at that fucking magazine has their own series, and not a single person of color has their own.
Well, it just doesn't make any sense. Coming from someone that thinks about the way that you structure your media business, you know, Bon Appetit already has a structure for compensating their workers. And up until they've, you know, obviously video is a new frontier, yeah? Like, where a lot of places are just still figuring out how to do it. But the fact that they're making salary of whether or not you get paid from the video department contingent on whether or not you have a series doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Personally. I mean, maybe that's like an incentive to push, but then so many of Bon Appetit's videos are not series.
Yeah.
Wait, are they? Are there? There are, right? I'm thinking.
There are some that are, like, there's been kind of like a recurring, there's been kind of like a recurring thing happening of like,
we ask chefs a question.
Yeah.
Like, or or like the Making Perfect series.
Right.
There are more and more like types of video that, especially post-quarantine, and you know, obviously like the quarantine kind of changed everything, like maybe there's room for that, but it was not new, the idea of we sat down 10 chefs and had them say this, that, or the other. That structure should have, before they even went down that path, like ethically, there should have been some understanding of, well, there are going to be people that are putting labor into this whose labor is not, they don't have a series and it's not going to be compensated. Like, ethically, that should have been an issue.
Yeah.
And that's the structure of people only get paid whether or not they have a series for video content is contingently, like it's, that structure is set up in a way that there is going to be unpaid labor.
Right. And something that's been weighing on my mind is the fact that, like, so Sola El Wali is, like, you know, 30, I think she's, like, 34, 35. She's owned a restaurant. She's 15 years in this industry. She's an assistant food editor. Mm-hmm. And Alex Delaney is 2 years younger than me. He's 28, I think. And he's 28 or maybe even 27. And is...
That's a series we didn't mention. Is his just, like, getting to go to restaurants and eating everything on the menu.
Yeah, exactly.
He gets paid extra for that.
Yeah, but he, for a long time, was an assistant web editor. He did not go to culinary school. He's 27 and is now the drinks editor at Bon Appetit. So, like, Sola El Wali arrives and Alex Delaney gets promoted. I mean, not that's not to say that Sola wanted to be the drinks editor. It's just like the fact that she's watching 27-year-olds with no formal background in this getting promoted over her. It's like, fuck.
Yeah. The only other thing I wanted to mention for this episode, because we're doing a really good time, is there's an article we just recently posted, because this is just happening today when we're recording. J. Cole and No Name. Have you heard about this yet?
Mm-mm.
For those that don't know, those are two rappers. J. Cole's based out of North Carolina. No Name's based out of Chicago, actually. And basically there's just been, I think a feud is probably the wrong word for it. That's kind of feeding into the, like, kind of divisive nature of social media sometimes. Basically, what has happened, J. Cole released a new song last night, and the entire song is about an unnamed young lady who's very smart but has come out criticizing mainstream rappers, like well-known rappers, for not using their platform to speak about Black Lives Matter. Not even put the tweet that, so the tweet that started it was, it was rumored that this was the tweet that started it, and then it was confirmed later, was this tweet by No Name that was basically to that effect of, if you're a mainstream rapper and you haven't used your platform to even put a tweet up about what's going on right now, you know, that's an issue. And so then, yeah, then J. Cole made this track. People put those, connected those dots together. And then today, J. Cole tweeted out saying, yes, that song was about No Name. I highly recommend you go follow her, because she's smarter than I am. The song, a lot of people are talking about that the song is really, like, misogynistic in tone. It's really, which I hear that personally, kind of just talking about, you know, it's very, it reads very, how can a woman, like, push me to be more progressive? Like, this isn't, I don't know. Go read the lyrics yourself and kind of make your own opinion on that. But yeah, No Name really hasn't said much since then. But Chance the Rapper actually tweeted a couple tweets today about it, basically saying, like, yeah, no, she made an offhanded tweet about you, and you needed to release a track, a full track, like, condemning her the way that she criticized. And it really, the nature of the criticisms really bring up this idea of, and again, this is not, like, things that I've gleaned. This is just, like, understandings that I've gained from black folks on Twitter, especially, that, you know, some of the ideas that J. Cole brings up in the track is just, like, you know, your background, she's talking about No Name, like, made it such that you were able to receive the education about the history of radical, you know, black movements.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas someone like me, who came up with different circumstances, you know, has not had the opportunity to get that education. Like, why are you criticizing? You should be educating instead. And that is super gaslighty, because it's like, you know, that was basically what Chance was saying, of like you're gonna not take her criticism, and instead you're just gonna say that she should be teaching you. Like, that's not her responsibility.
Got it. The idea, there's a term I've learned recently. It's called sea lioning, and it's a form of gaslighting, and it's a form of harassment that a lot of quote-unquote allies use. It's obviously false allies, but they'll reach out to a marginal, you know, insert marginalized person, and just ask a lot of questions that, a lot of, like, condescending questions that are, that seem like they're just playing devil's advocate, but it's basically just, like, in pursuit of emotionally exhausting that person. And there's been a lot of that happening recently, of, like, listen, I'm just trying to learn. How can you expect me to become a better ally if you don't educate me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just have these questions, and I thought that, you know, since you want equality so badly, that you would be over the moon to answer these for me so that I can know how to treat you better.
Yeah.
And it's, like, that is so incredibly condescending, first of all. The fact that I have to prove that I have to, like, you know, in a battle of wits, demonstrate that I'm, you know, not me personally, but to demonstrate that a person is worthy of equal treatment or equitable treatment, that I, you know, that I have to basically, like, answer me these riddles three. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's what I've got.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, again, like I said, that the J. Cole No Name stuff is just happening in the last day, so kind of check that out, keep an eye on it. Otherwise, I mean, that's all I've got for today. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
We pre-recorded this.
We pre-recorded the outro. Well, stay safe.
You all are great.
Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much for listening.
And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there's so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scottbmag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. You can also keep up with us on social media. We have a Facebook page called Scott Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, where we talk about local arts, local politics, astrology, memes, you name it. There you can also find a link to our Discord server called Sounding Board as well, where we hang out, have fun, have a good time. And yeah, so check it out. Otherwise, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under ScoppyMag, spelled the same way as the website, ScapimAg. And you can find the podcast, the one you're listening to right now, in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, the best way to do that is by becoming a member. For $2 a month, you will receive an email in your inbox every time we post. So say goodbye to that social media algorithm and hello to our content. Also, we have merch for sale. If you head to scottbmag.com/store, you can buy your new favorite t-shirt, and that is a promise. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scottbmag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.